listening to the Hometown Losers, the St. Louis Sports Podcast, with Josh, Adam, and OJ.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back here to the Hometown Losers Podcast. This is session number 40, and I think officially the beginning of season two, since we're in working on our second year now of being the podcast. I'm joined as always by my co-hosts and OJ and Adam. Gentlemen, I hope you had a good turkey day and Thanksgiving, and I'm ready to talk with you guys. How are you guys
doing? Good here. Had a great time. Took some time off of work and enjoyed the turkey day, so it was great.
I also enjoyed Thanksgiving, and so I'm pretty relaxed, having a good time.
Thanksgiving was pretty good. I got to, you know, hang out with my 90-year-old grandma, my 91-year-old grandma for a little bit. So that was really cool. A very nice, relaxing day. Always good to, you know, get those that big old family meal, you know, for the most part. So that was that was pretty nice.
Great game this year with their dishes.
What'd you say?
I said people brought their A game this year at my family place with their dishes.
Yeah, it definitely felt like that as well on my end. The turkey was really good. And my mom, when I got over there, we were trying to bake it. You know what I mean, in the oven. But we were trying to get the timing right of it. Because obviously, if you put in there too long, it's going to be real dry. But we got it pretty good, pretty right. And I'm not really a big turkey guy. I'm more of a ham guy for like Christmas and like, I guess, Easter, just depending on how families celebrate Easter. I know my family does ham for Easter and stuff. But but this was pretty good. I had quite a few slices of turkey. I'm not going to lie. It was pretty good.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, we split it up this year. We did first one night, because I do two Thanksgivings. First Thanksgiving I did during the day, it was turkey and the regulars. The second one, though, it was kind of nice because we did the ham and also lasagna as an entree. I was like, oh, this is different. So it actually was kind of nice to like not have to fill up on the same stuff twice in a row. So, and the sides were even a little different, too. So I like a little variety.
So I'll tell you a real quick funny story before we get into this. So my cousin's husband, they actually go to five different Thanksgivings on Thanksgiving.
Oh, hell no.
So it's much. All day long. They got two young kids. So it's like, you know, just going around. But Drew always eats a plate or two, you know, when he gets to my mom's house, which is like stop number three or four. And so I'm like, dude, do you not like get tired of it? He goes, oh, I'm tired of it, but it's still food I'm going to eat. He's an army guy. You know what I mean? So he's going to eat. But
geez, I couldn't do five. There is no way. Two is
there's no way
enough.
Like, two is like enough for me. Like, I don't think I could even do two. Like, if I go to my dad's, I barely eat when I'm over there.
Right.
Yeah, going to one's enough, I think.
For sure. But yeah, it was nice. Exactly. It was nice, though, doing that and then watching some football and everything else and then just relaxing. So it was chill. And like I said, I had the week off, too. So it was nice to just eat and be lazy for a little while.
Yeah. The good old American way right there.
Damn right. But now I'm back. Now I'm back to being strict again. So had to put that aside.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, guys, let's go ahead and get to some sports talk here. And the biggest one that we definitely need to talk about first is definitely the Cardinals, right? The Cardinals have had some big off-season signings, although I don't know if big is the operable term here. But we did sign three pitchers, so I'm going to go through these real quick because I have a bunch of their statistics and stuff like that, and then we'll just talk about like our overall thoughts with them. So the first guy we signed was Lance Lynn. Yes, you guys heard right. Lance Lynn.
Mm-hmm. He's back.
He is returning to the Cardinals, right, on a one-year $10 million deal. There is a club option for another year for $11 million. Lance Lynn, just for everybody's knowledge, is 37. He will be 37 when the season rolls around. Last year, he was 13-11 with an ERA of 5.73. He had 32 starts, 183.2 innings pitched. He gave up 189 hits, 127 runs, which out of those 117 of them were earned. He gave up 44 home runs last year, which led the league. 67 walks, 191 strikeouts, and a whip of a dismal 1.39. 4. He is a career guy of 136 wins, 95 losses, 3.74 ERA out of 317 starts. He has 1,889 innings pitched. So he most likely will break the 200 or 2,000 inning plateau for his career. He has given up 1,743 hits, 842 runs, 215 home runs, 660 walks. He does have 1906 on strikeouts, so he's 1906 strikeouts and a career whip of 1.72. The second guy we signed was Kyle Gibson, an actual Mizzou pitcher. He is going to be 36. It was a 1-year deal for $12 million. There is another club option that's added onto it for an additional $12 million after the fact. Last year for the Orioles, he was 15-9 out of the 33 games that he started, ERA of 4.73 out of 192 innings. He gave up 198 hits, 101 runs with 101 earned runs, which is a very odd and not very common thing to see. Like, their actual runs they give up were all earned. Kind of crazy in that aspect. Gave up 23 home runs, 55 walks, 157 strikeouts with a 1.318 whip. Again, pretty abysmal there. For his career, he's 104 to 100 and 294 starts. 4.54 for his career ERA, 1,696 innings pitch. He's given up 1,747 on hits in his career, 907 runs, 203 home runs, 589 walks, and career strikeouts, 1,359 with a career whip of 1.377. So pretty bad as well. But this one is the big one. And it was one that we've been that has been rumored for the Cardinals for a very long time. Sonny Gray will be joining the team. He finished second in the Cy Young voting this year. He was 34, he will be 34 this season. The deal was for $7 million. Over 3 years. There is a club option that's tacked onto the end of it for an additional 30, but it's very heavily backloaded, that $7 million, which is great for us, obviously, if we're going to try to make some headway this season. The year splits are: in the first year, you'll make $10 million, second year will be 25, and the third year will be $35 million. He last year was 8-8 out of the 32 games that he started, 2.79 ERA, so pretty good. 184 innings pitched, gave up 156 hits, 59 runs, 8 home runs, 55 walks, 183 strikeouts, and a whip that's pretty good, especially for today's standard, 1.147. In his career, he has 98 wins, 85 losses, over 270 starts, a career ERA of 3.47 that has been coming down pretty much every single year for the most part, 1,571 innings pitched, 1,348 hits off those innings pitch. He's given up 664 runs, 146 home runs, walked 544 batters, but struck out 1,521 and a career whip of 1.204. That is a lot of information all at once. I don't know. But I thought it was important to talk about what they did last year as well as they've done over their careers. So for sure. I'm going to get off the statistics here and let's talk about these signings. What are our thoughts on her? Adam, what's your thoughts on the three signings that we've got so far?
Yeah. So looking at these recent signings, you know, it's really challenging for us to summon like a big surge of excitement, in my opinion. You know, while the three of them are well-seasoned pitchers, for me, they just don't bring that kind of thrill that one might expect, you know, or at least what I was hoping for. You know, with Lynn and Gibson on one-year deals, you know, they hit like maybe a quick fix. Gray's contract structure, while you mentioned it was heavily backloaded, it definitely raises questions about, you know, our long-term financial, you know, strategy as well. You know, it feels more like a pragmatic kind of move rather than a bold statement of intent. So, you know, for Mo in the front office, they just seem to be treading very carefully. And perhaps they're learning from the consequences, you know, like some of their past high profile, you know, acquisitions as well. So maybe they're just trying to make some, you know, these smaller moves initially just to see how we can strengthen the rotation. And I think with the addition of Gray, I think that undoubtedly strengthens our rotation, you know, and the overall impact does seem to have more, you know, incremental than transformative, though. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's going to be a small change than what I was hoping for long, you know, something long term. But, you know, the recent history of pitching struggles for the Cardinals, of course, puts these signings under a very much more cautious light. You know, for me, I really have to say, you know, are we really witnessing a genuine push for contention again? Or is this just, you know, another attempt to address pitching concerns within, you know, within our certain like financial boundaries? You know, we've all been burnt by previous disappointments, you know, and we can't help but approach these moves with a mix of hope and reservation for sure. But, you know, in the end, it's really a solid upgrade to the rotation, and stability is undoubtedly valuable. But the lingering questions remain, you know, are these moves enough to elevate us to, a competitive level? Or are we just going to be settling again for, you know, a familiar, position in the middle tier? You know, obviously, time will tell. Obviously, this, you know, strategic approach pays off. You know, if they can actually overcome the skepticism that inevitably, you know, accompanies, you know, the cautious optimism. But that's kind of where I stand on it.
Yeah, you bring up some really good points, Adam. You know, a lot of it, when it comes to the financial stability in the next 3 to 4 years, it makes you really think of it. This is all feels very short term. Obviously, we'll see what ends up happening. But, you know, we knew that we weren't going to go out and get Shohei Ohtani and stuff like that. So it is hard because, like, you know, that the players are out there, but what are the Cardinals going to do? What are the probability? And, you know, so I think that definitely played a little bit into it. But these do feel like safer choices. But again, nothing to really move the needle for me. OJ, what's your thoughts as well? You know, did this move the needle for you, or are you kind of on the same wavelength? Like, what's your thoughts? I know you're definitely more analytic when it comes to this stuff than myself or Adam will be.
I'm not super thrilled with this because I don't think Sonny Gray's like the ace that, like, he's not an ace probably. Like, he put up 5-4 last season, which is definitely ace material, but the last time he put up anything near that was 2019. He put up 4.5. Outside of that, he's been like a 2-WAR pitcher for like the last, you know, 6-7 years, whatever. So that's probably more where he'll actually be still. I mean, I know Zips actually projects him pretty well, though, over the next 3 years. Like, they say he's 3.5 next year. You know, regressing down, but I think even the third year of the contract, it's still at like 2 WAR. So, like, basically, the dude at least be a pretty good serviceable pitcher for the entirety of the contract. So that's good. And then Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn are, not great.
Yeah.
Kyle Gibson better than Lynn, but I mean, here's the thing: Lance Lynn had. He also had like a 19% home run to fly ball ratio, which is way greater than league average, which is also generally people think that that ratio is random, right? People tend to not think there's a whole lot of control a pitcher has over whether the pitch actually goes out of the park or not. So, you know, if you regress it down to league average, which is like 9-10% every year, his numbers look much better, and it reflects in his advanced stats. Like, he's got a 5.73 ERA, but a 4.86 expected ERA. So, you know, average fly ball ratio that goes out of the park, 4.86. Like, you can do that as like a fifth starter, especially if he's going to be durable in the innings, which he had 183 last year between two teams. I also note, from what I remember reading, I'm having trouble with the splits on Fangraphs here right now. But I remember reading that I think he improved a little bit after he was traded to the Dodgers last season. So there's some upside potential there as far as like getting a guy that can eat the role of a fifth starter, you know. The same thing with Kyle Gibson. They all should be durable enough to eat some innings. Like, this was, even though they're all old, They all also have been very durable historically. And I also think, if I'm not mistaken, Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson had a fair few quality starts between the two of them. And then a lot of their bad numbers come from games where they got just shelled. So that's another thing. You are going to get – they are going to keep you in games a lot. So, I'm a little higher on it now than I was then. And the other reason I think that it's kind of nice what they've done is because, they backloaded the contract. Sure, that's probably something just to help them smooth over cash flow issues, because there's a Bally issue, right? They're not sure whether they're going to collect in rights fees this next season. So like, they probably would like to keep the cost low, and everything, from what I understand, everything should be decided as far as Bally's by the time this season's done. So at that point, correct, they could look at expanding their expenditures more. But I mean, I think they're still going to get up close to $200 million or so. But anyway, they still got guys they could trade. And that's the thing. Now they're not dealing from a position of super weakness. When they went into the offseason, everybody knew they needed three starting pitchers. So if you're going to try and trade for a starter, you were going to get taken to the cleaners because they knew you needed it desperately. Now you can say,
yeah, exactly,
rotation I can go into the season with. I don't have to trade with you. You know what I'm saying? And it gives you that ability to walk out now that you wouldn't have had before. And I am almost, since they did all these moves so quick, I almost wonder if that's not what they're going for. I mean, I really think that they're working on something like that, but I still think it's more likely than not we just stick with this rotation. So anyway, point is, like, from a strategy standpoint, I like it. From what they're trying to do, it like offers you a nice floor for your pitching. And I think the Cardinals are due for like a lot of regression to the mean from last season. I mean, the biggest difference to me on whether they're going to be successful or not is more like how do they change like the way they play baseball, essentially. Like, I'm looking more on the leadership end. Like, are we deploying our guys effectively? Like, are we going to give Alec Burleson a bunch of innings in left field again next season? Because if so, we're going to have a pretty shitty season. If they learned their lesson, then I think we could see quite a big improvement just from that. So I'm still kind of optimistic about the season altogether.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jay, you bring up a really good point when it comes to, you know, making sure you get those pitchers before you're trying to try the trade, because no longer are you desperate. You're still needy, but you're not desperate. You know what I mean? And so those deals that you would be taking to the absolute cleaners for would be, you know, are going to be severely reduced, right? Or at least reduced to a certain point. I mean, obviously, no one's just going to be giving up everything, but it's just, you know, it to me, like, they signed Lance Lynn, and then the next day they signed Kyle Gibson. In the back of my mind is, okay, here we go. It's Mazalak doing the exact, proving that he didn't learn anything. We don't need pitching and all that stuff. He's going to do what, you know, is good for him to, and maybe enough to win the Central, and that's it. That's my other thing about this too, is like, I like the fact now that we have Sonny Gray, that we do have two guys towards the back end of the rotation, Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson, that can be more, at least more consistent with our rotation was last year for sure. They are going to be eating inners and stuff like that. And obviously you got to expect that Lance Lynn's home runs that he gave up last year is going to severely regress playing at Busch, right? Because it's not a hitter's park for the most part. It's a balanced park. So like, you got to feel that that's going to happen. But my thing about it is, it kind of going to your point, Adam, as well, it doesn't really move the needle. And I'm not all that excited. I'm excited because it's going to be better than last year. Well, sure,
it should be, but
the thing about it is, I look at this rotation, and let's just look at it from top to bottom. You have Sonny Gray, you have Miles Michaelis, then you have, you know, Steven Matz, then Kyle Gibson, Lance Lynn. That to me is not a rotation that's going to win you the World Series. And if you're going to continue to just try to like get central division championships over and over, might as well just try to do with youth, right? So that's kind of what I'm in the middle of this. I think they definitely need to do more when it comes to pitching. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in the next segment. But, you know, for me, I was okay with the Kyle Gibson. as like a number five guy. Obviously, like, I liked the Gray signing, but I thought that it was I read something on like Twitter or X, now that it's called, that someone said that Mozeliak is actually a genius. And people were like, you know, started bashing. We're like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, this was before we actually signed Sonny Gray. And he's like, these moves have been atrocious, blah, blah. And he goes, hold on. He's like, what I mean by that is he's a marketing genius. Because we came into the offseason, you know, going Sonny Gray. Like, most fans were like, Sonny Gray, okay, that's not enough, right? So then he signs Lance Lynn. He signs Kyle Gibson. And then all of a sudden, fans are like, oh, my God, we got Sonny Gray. You know, I'm like,
that was my reaction.
I
was pissed. I was like, the only way they save this for me is if they go sign Yamamoto.
I agree.
Of course not.
Yeah.
But then I realized one thing I do like a little more about Sonny right now is that he is coming from Minnesota, and I didn't realize that at the time. But Minnesota's a very good. They sustain themselves entirely by being able to teach pitching. So like, it does give me some hope that maybe he learned some tricks there. Cause like his numbers with them have been phenomenal. So
yeah,
I mean, you know, so there's a little bit more hope there. I like him coming from them more than like the Reds, for instance. If he was coming from the Reds, I'd feel like, oh man, he's just a loser.
Exactly. But like, you know, getting back to that, like I'm okay with Gibson. I like the Gray signing, but as like a number two. I didn't like him as like, this is your ace, because OJ, you allude to, he's not really an ace. Like, some of the analysts are saying like, oh, they got their ace-ish pitcher. Like, they're not saying he's an ace because he's not an ace.
Ace-ish. Like, he's a solid two-three, most likely.
I agree. You know?
He had Cy Young votes last year. He's not likely to repeat that, you know?
Agreed. Like, he is a slight upgrade to Miles Michaelis. As like a number two,
I wouldn't say that. I'd say he's a pretty big upgrade over Michaelis if Michaelis has another season like last season, which bad stretches that kind of evened out to be more bad.
Yeah,
but
yeah, but, and that's kind of what I was going with there. OJ it's slight upgrade to. Not last year, but the year before, where he pitched pretty well. Like, and you know, and Pujols and Molina's last season, he pitched pretty well. So I think that is kind of what I look for. But again, he's just not an ace. That's you know, just prove the point though that he's not an ace. I tell you what, I hate the Lance Lynn signing. That's $10 million we could have given to somebody else. You could have given it to a younger pitcher. You could have gone and used that as a $10 million package to try to, you know, have trade, the financial flexibility for a trade. You could have put that $10 million towards Yamamoto. But one of the main reasons why I hate Lance Lynn, I hate the Lance Lynn signing. When he got traded last year from the White Sox to the Dodgers, before that, he had to submit his 10-team no trade clause. And like the Cardinals were on his team for the do not trade me there. And I'm really? Like, go ahead.
But he just signed with them. So why do you think you know that it's common knowledge that when you have a limited no trade list, you'll put teams that you actually don't care. You put teams that you think you're likely to be traded to on the no trade list. Because that way you have a little bit of leverage when it comes time to trade. You see what I'm saying? So there's every possibility that they've been talking with our front office already. And maybe Lynn's agent heard about it or something. And so he's like, hey, put the Cardinals on there. They might trade you there. You know what I'm saying? And then that way.
Then why wouldn't he want to come here? Like, I don't understand that point. Then why wouldn't he want to come here?
That's why you go on the no trade list. So that way you have leverage. They have to give you something for you to waive that. You see what I'm saying?
Because leverage for what though? Because
if they want to trade you to the Cardinals, then you can say, no, I won't go unless you give me this. Like, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I don't, because it's not like the Cardinals were going to be able, you know, we're going to give up a, you know, crap ton to come to Lance Lynn or to go after Lance Lynn. And obviously, you know, they were sellers anyways, right? So it's more of a moot point at that point.
Well, it's dealing with the White Sox. If the White Sox want to send him there, he can ask him for stuff. He can say, oh, you need to sign, you know, whatever. Like, basically, he can ask for whatever he wants. Just, I'll waive it. Because this isn't a scenario during last season, like, if the White Sox had, and the Cardinals had agreed on a trade to bring him to St. Louis. Well, Lance Lynn doesn't have to let the trade go through because they're on his no-trade list. So now he has leverage. Now he can say, somebody needs to give me X kind of thing, and then I'll waive it and I can go. So it could just be, given the fact they just signed with the Cardinals, I think it was that case where he was just, he thought he might get traded here last year, so he put us on his no trade list.
I mean, I kind of sort of understand what you're talking about, but if the White Sox see that, okay, the Cardinals are on the no trade list, then we're just going to go find a different suitor, which they did in the Dodgers. So I'm not understanding that.
I'm not saying it's, I'm not saying it works 100%. I'm just saying that's what people will do with their no trade list, especially if you don't have, like, if you have a 10-team no trade list and you don't have 10 teams where you're like, I won't go there. You know, if you don't really care that much, then you might as well use it for leverage on the off chance that that's what it is. You know, like I said, that's his best guess. His agent probably had heard some shit about the Cardinals talking to them. About getting Lance Lynn. He's like, hey, I know they're talking to him, so put him on your list so that way you can get a little out of it if they do trade you that way. Like, that's probably what it was, given that he signed here.
I gotcha. Well, again, like, you know, agree to disagree on that one, but, you know, moving on from it. Again, I just wasn't, you know, regardless of that, you know, I was not happy with Lance Lynn with the signing and stuff like that, because I felt like we could have at least given it to, like, Matthew Liberatore as, like, a bat or a fifth pitcher or something like that. I mean, obviously, he didn't have the greatest season last year when he was called up, but try to get some of the younger pitching in, I guess. But, you know, it is going to be a suitable eating inner, you know, and I think that's what we're going to be looking at towards the future. But it does ask the question, and it kind of, you know, I kind of alluded to this earlier, you know, do the Cardinals need to do more in addressing the pitcher? And, like, in my opinion, I think they do, but I want to hear from you guys as well here. Adam, what's your thoughts? Do the Cardinals need to get more pitching, whether it's, you know, starting pitching or for the bullpen?
Yeah. Well, probably a little of both, you know. So obviously the signings, you know, of Lance Lynn, Kyle Gibson, and Sonny Gray definitely bolster our pitching staff from, you know, where we were last year. But really, we need to address, you know, our pitching needs, just depending on where our aspirations are, like I was mentioning earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, if we actually want to secure a competitive position in the short term, then, you know, we need to actually take a significant leap into the upper echelons of contention. You know, like, we need to actually look at putting in a more stable rotation that includes, you know, a clear ace. You know, that's definitely one of our main concerns here, you know, and obviously for us to acquire a top tier starting pitcher, you know, that would definitely have a big impact on actually getting deep into playoff run potentially, you know, and obviously, go ahead.
I was just saying, putting butts in seats too. Like, that
would
put some.
It certainly would. Absolutely. Because we have seen a significant drop off last year in, you know, people showing up to the games. I mean, yeah, while we're still showing up, they're having to heavily discount tickets to get people to show up, and revenue's going down. They're obviously losing the Bally's deal, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the point is that obviously with the winter meetings and the trade market obviously offer the potential avenues for us to, you know, maybe look at further upgrades, you know, for us, you know, there's definitely room for improvement, especially if we want to have a presence in the postseason. But we've talked about this before, you know, mm-hmm. is being a Central Division champion good enough? Or do we actually want to have a deep run into the playoffs? That's the question I think I need answered by the Mozeliak in the front office. Because right now, with these moves, I don't see that we truly are serious about that, you know?
Agreed. And Adam, I think that's a very good point, right? It's, I feel like all Cardinals fans are kind of wanting that. I feel we need an honest answer from Mo. Are you chasing Central League banners, or are you trying to get a freaking pennant and get to the World Series again?
Until they truly come out and answer that, I have zero faith that we're going to do anything serious to push ourselves to be in contention for a pennant again. You know, one thing that we need to consider focusing on, and that you brought up, was bolstering our bullpen, you know, and we need to start exploring, you know, maybe potential trades or, you know, some free agent signings to secure some more reliable relief pitchers as well. You know,
keep going. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say we need to establish some closers or at least some setup pitchers, you know, with a track record of success, in my opinion. So, you know, when we start looking at that, you know, we can start talking about that later on. But for me, we need to look at where we can potentially leverage those trades or look at the free agents out there. But we must focus on an ace for our starting pitchers, you know, our rotation, I should say, as well as bolstering that bullpen, because we've seen a complete collapse in that bullpen. And that is a serious thing that I don't think has been addressed here at all. You know,
agreed. Yeah, OJ, what's your thoughts, especially around the bullpen?
I'm honestly pretty similar with Adam, but so the bullpen, we know they have said that that's what they're looking at now for sure. So we know they're looking at bullpen pieces, possibly through trade. So I do think they'll add maybe one or two guys there. As far as bullpen goes, depending on what happens with your starters, I know they said they liked having Steven Matz as like a swing man last season while he was, really recall, he struggled for a while. Then I think he went on the injured list, and then he came back in the bullpen where he did really well, and then they made him a starter again, and he had like seven starts where he pitched to like a 1.8 ERA, and then he had the lat strain that took him out the rest of the season. Of course, that was after they were already well out of contention, and they pretty much were just having all their veterans stop playing because of, you know, quote unquote injuries. So like, the point is that also could be a good sign for our rotation, because a healthy Steven Matz can be a really good pitcher. Like, the dude can look like an absolute, he probably has the most talent of any of the pitchers on our staff other than Sonny Gray at this point. So, you know, if he were to like reach his max potential, he would be your number two, really. So you'd have Sonny Gray, Steven Matz, Miles Michaelis. It wouldn't be so bad of a rotation. I mean, I'm pretty sure the Cardinals won 2006 with Chris Carpenter and nobody else in the rotation. So
yeah, that's like, true.
It can be done, but, let's see. I also think that as far as adding a starting pitcher goes, these signings do give them a lot of flexibility in how, if they wanted to add another one. So like, in the dream world scenario where Bill DeWitt's like, you know what, I'm going to show these fucking clowns, we're going to open up the pocketbooks, like, especially given Sonny Gray's backloaded contract and the fact that Gibson and Lynn fall off after this year, unless the team wants to keep them, you know, you got salary clearing up. You could still theoretically sign Yamamoto if that's what you wanted to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that would give you a hell of a rotation. But guess you could also trade for a pitcher. One of those trades could be for Tyler Glasnow from the Tampa Bay Rays. Tyler Glasnow, I believe, has one more year of control after this. So they don't want to make him a rental. So because they want to get more for him. But we also know that he's about to be making a lot of money, and Tampa Bay will never pay it. So, you know, we could work out a trade with them. And he's injured a lot, too. That's the other thing. And remember,
yes,
the main strength of all the guys that the Cardinals just signed is that they all eat innings. So you could see a reality where maybe you keep Steven Matz, who also has had his own injury issues, and you kind of have him and Glass now in your rotation, and you got – you know, Lance Lynn, and maybe he's your long reliever or something that can spot start in the bullpen. You got Kyle Gibson as your fifth starter. So what? You'd have like, you know, Glasnow, Sonny, and like Steven Miles Michaelis, Kyle Gibson, your swingman to come in when one of them is hurt. That'd kind of be a decent rotation too. So now they have options for addressing it again if they still want to. Like I said, I think it's more likely than not we go into the season with the rotation we've got now. But I do think they'll at least add a couple more bullpen pieces. And I do think they're trying to get another pitcher right now. I just don't – I'm not confident that that's going to get worked out for them.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, both of you were just touched on kind of like my thoughts on it as well. I mean, I believe we do need another front of the rotation guy, and I do believe we need help in the bullpen. I'm thinking we need to help in the bullpen for like a setup guy or late innings guy and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
And since OJ, you kind of already brought it up, you know, like what are some of the moves that Cardinals like can do? Let's get to that segment here. Cause you actually brought up Tyler Gastelau, right? And he's actually on my list too, yeah, for a trade opportunity. Last year was 10-7 out of 21 games. He started 3.53 ERA. But he, you know, got 120 innings, gave up 93 runs, 93 hits off 52 runs, 13 home runs, and 162 strikeouts, and a WHIP of 1.083. You know, he's got some years left to it, not in control, because you just said there's the one more year that the Rays have for control. But he's a younger pitcher. You know, I think he's going to be like 28, 29, if I remember correctly. Let me double check on that because I have his stuff pulled up right here. As long as it will load, he'll be 30. He'll be 30 next year. So he's actually a little bit older than I thought, but I thought that would be reasonable for them. You know, and the biggest thing, obviously, to make this feel like a good offseason, and okay, the Cardinals are serious about winning, I think it's very obvious to everybody, signing Yamamoto. You know, signing Yamamoto is going to put you in that category that you are very serious about winning this. I mean, yep. Yamamoto. And he playing in the Japanese league, which is not terribly too far off from MLB in competition wise, is 75-30 with a 1.72 ERA career, 967 innings pitched, 986 strikeouts, a WHIP of 0.915, and his strikeouts in nine is 9.2, which is ridiculous. You know what I mean? He's got excellent swing and miss stuff. And if you look at this rotation, that's what I think we really are missing. Not necessarily just Yamamoto's dominance, but a swing and miss guy. You know what I mean? So yep. Even if you get like a guy that's as high strikeout, but high home run ratio or whatever, in Bush 3, that plays really well. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. The only reason why I think that Mo will probably not go after him, as I think that they should have targeted him from the very beginning, I think we've already committed too much to the three new starters for the season already. Mm-hmm. So I really think it's unlikely that he will be going after Yamamoto at this point anyway. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that it's not possible, but just knowing how and seeing how the moves that Mo has been making so far up to this point, I don't see it happening. My personal opinion.
Yeah, I agree. It's highly unlikely. I mean, apparently there's still interest between both parties, but I'm with you guys. Like, I don't know what other teams are going to have been offering him already. Mm-hmm. You know, he also hasn't, there are some risks to Yamamoto that might keep his price lower than some people think, because he is coming from the Japanese league. So it's not one for one comparison. They use a smaller baseball. So he's going to have a different grip. That's something to be concerned about, you know? He also had to pitch more often. There's more games, I believe, in the MLB season. So, you know, people have been speculating, oh, what if you do a six-man rotation if you bring him in? You could argue that signing Lynn and Gibson was you could go to a six-man rotation with Yamamoto, you know? You could also, you know, argue that the other way, too.
In my opinion, we could have given up Lynn and Gibson. In my opinion, went after Yamamoto myself, but
that was kind of my point. Or you could also look
at, yeah, or you could look at it was, you know, potentially instead of Sonny Gray, Yamamoto. But I would personally have not signed Lynn and freed up that money. Like, to your point, Josh, I agree with you there. That was a waste of money. Yeah. Where we could have given that to potentially to Yamamoto, and that's why I feel like we're out of contention now. You know.
I do feel like signed Yamamoto first, but I'm saying that's still in play. I think it's much more likely they made those signings to give them better leverage in trades, and that's probably the primary way they're looking to add a starting pitcher right now.
Yeah.
Right.
And
Yamamoto is right now the fair market is showing that he is $200 million for a 5-year deal. So that's $40 million a year, which is a significant, you know.
That's way, whatever you're looking at is bullshit. Don't listen to it. It's wrong. I promise you that. He's not getting 40
You think it's too low or too high?
Way too high. He's not getting Trout money after coming over from Japan for the first time. Like, come on, dude. Whatever website you look at, you should not
I'm
trust.
Looking at Forbes. Look at Forbes, dog.
Forbes doesn't know baseball because not for he's not getting $40 million a year. That's clickbait or somebody that's really ignorant. Like I mean that very seriously.
I'm just saying that's what they're showing. He will likely command a contract more than $200 million, and the value of Snell just completed a $5 million or 5-year deal for around the same. So
yeah, I think they just got.
I mean,
I don't disagree with the number.
The fact that he is young for sure definitely is an advantage, and he's also, you know, he's obviously, you know, has a track record that is positive, but that is awfully high. Wow. And that definitely takes him completely out of contention for us. And the other thing is he's also waiting until after the winter meetings too to really make his final decision. And so with that, that really puts pressure on us to act on a move, you know, if one is available during that week, you know, really does.
But what I've been seeing has been like 200 million, but for like 8 years, not five. I really don't think that a team will go anywhere near 40 mil AAV on somebody that's coming from a different league. You know, you really have.
Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. People, I think even those like 25 million projections might be high. Going into the season, I think someone was projecting him for like one, not going into the season, sorry. Before he posted, somebody came out with some projections. They said like 190 something for seven, something like that. And it's like people are like, well, I'd do that in a heartbeat. Oh, well, yeah, so would everybody else. So they'll drive it up. Yeah, but only so much. I mean, there are risks there. There's unknowns. And if you sign the guy for a bunch of AAV and then he turns out to be a dud, because not every stud Japanese pitcher that comes over succeeds in the MLB. Yusei Kikuchi, I believe, is a recent one that's been struggling. So, like, I think he will sign for less than people think, even though he's probably your best bet at a good pitcher coming in the free agent market this season. Right.
Especially a younger pitcher too.
Yeah, I mean the dude's only 25 years old. You know,
he's 24. Right. I think he'll be 25 next season.
He's 25. That's, he turned 25 August 17th, 1980.
Yeah, but it'll be his 25th season.
So it'll be his age 25 season next year.
Wow. Well, yes. He is 25 currently. That's what I'm saying.
No, you're right. You're right, and I was wrong. I was just
So
confirming that it was his age 25 season.
Yeah. Right. If he would start the season, he would still be 25 up until mid-August. So the majority of the season. So either way, he's very young. And for him to get a deal like that is a bit unheard of, right? For somebody only 25, a pitcher, especially out of this league. I'm not discounting the fact that, you know, they're rumoring it, but it does seem like a lot of money.
I want him really bad. I'm not saying
he's bad. Same here.
But there's significant risk to signing him for like a huge amount of money too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think he'll tamper down some of what some of teams will be.
There's a lot of people that are looking for him. You know, obviously the Yankees, you know, the Red Sox, the Mets, the Giants. You know, I'm sure the Dodgers because they have shitloads of money just to wipe their ass off with. So, you know.
Yeah, but they probably all have their caps on what they're willing to bid for him, right? And if they're
you say that, man, but
doesn't seem like that's gonna stop him anymore, man. Like it doesn't seem like that stops anybody. Dude,
I can't remember the name of the owner of the Mets, but dude, he is just is.
Yeah, Steve Cohen. That dude is crazy.
Oh, Cohen, yeah. Did you know? So the luxury tax, the luxury tax that, you know, the teams get charged for the MLB has been unofficially named after him.
Well, I mean, the dude's worth $20 billion. So what does that tell you? He has an unlimited amount of wealth when it comes to this.
That's the problem, dude. The cheaters always prosper in this country.
You know?
Fucking hate. Did you hear? I saw somebody posted something about Japan. Like, I guess they're like one of their most dominant historic college football teams, which I didn't know they had. But apparently, it's been around for like 80 years. But apparently, they disbanded it because three members got caught smoking pot which is like a huge offense in most Asian, a lot of Asian countries, I guess I should say.
Yeah, really, most of the world, wow. Period, dude, honestly.
it is very harshly, but my point is, even with something very harsh, could you imagine disbanding like Alabama's football program because some three players did? Even if they all went out and murdered somebody, they wouldn't disband it. I mean,
OJ.
And blatantly cheated this year, and they're not getting any postseason bans. People have video.
They got a slap on the wrist.
Missouri self-reports and gets fucking postseason bans on a truly isolated incident that they self-reported. Like, I hate that. It's like, I hate that they had to disband their program, but I respect that they did it. I would rather live in that society. That's all I'm saying. And I'm not.
Well, that Stephen Cohen dude that owns the Mets, he literally I just looked it up. He just literally pled guilty to insider trading, and he had to pay almost $2 billion in fines. And it was one of the biggest criminal cases against a hedge fund ever.
There you go.
The dude is a freaking giant fraud.
They were suspicious of him in the 80s when he got started.
Yeah.
And then shit broke his way. He's been doing – he made all his money that way. He's been cheated.
Yeah, he's
his
a hedge fund. Yeah, he's a hedge fund manager. You know, that's what he is.
Dream of owning a baseball team. Mm-hmm. Like, come on, man. Why do the cheaters always have to prosper? That sucks. Yep.
OJ, I it's funny that you bring up, you know, college football and obviously the comparison to Japan. So I just watched a 33 not long ago about the Miami Hurricanes and, you know, the convicts, Christians versus convicts and shit. And it's super funny too. So, you know, they won six national titles from 2000 or 98, I think, until like, I think it was like 2008 or something like that, like in the period that it was in. It actually might have been sooner than that. I don't know, but they won six national titles. But they literally got caught with players selling and distributing cocaine, and they didn't get the death penalty. What?
No one's got the death penalty since fucking SMU.
SMU. Yeah, exactly.
Because it's SMU.
Exactly. So it's super funny because it was like I was watching this and, you know, a lot of players, you know, a lot of good football players came from Miami, you know, Greg Olsen and stuff like that, which, by the way, Greg Olsen had a rap video about sodomizing a woman. That was just saying that actually like happened, but we don't talk like that never gets talked about because obviously it was ancient history and stuff. But Ed Reed was talking about like how he was going to, you know, pull his gun out and like, you know, come after somebody. And it's just like, holy crap. Like, and they acted like they're the victims for all this stuff. I'm like, but you were doing this. And they're like, well, it's Miami. That's the city of Miami. It's built on crime and, you know, corrupt stuff. I'm like, excuse?
Yeah, it's not.
I don't feel bad for you guys.
Is everyone in Miami literally a criminal? Is that a requirement to live there or something? Like, no, it's not.
Hey, so you know, we could all just move down there and just sell some blow, apparently, and make a lot of money.
Oh,
guys.
My. Yeah.
There's lots of people that have it hard that don't fucking do criminal shit. Like,
exactly.
I mean, come on, man. Yeah, fuck that.
Anyways, let's talk about one more here that I had in my list for other moves for the Cardinals before we kind of move on here from the Cardinals. But do you guys, Jordan Hicks is up for free agency now. Do you think there's a possible reunion? Would that help us in the back into the bullpen? OJ, what's your thought process on Jordan Hicks?
Definitely. If he wants to come back, I'd sign him back in a heartbeat. That dude, I agree. Yeah, I think he's got the makings of an absolute stud, like young Aroldis Chapman kind of shit. So I say let's go get him. And even better, really, I think, is he's got a killer secondary that if he could just command it a little better, he'd basically be Mariano Rivera at that point if he could get a slider down.
Yeah, I mean, the dude's a free agent, so let's bring him back for sure. Let's
bring him back, yeah.
Especially if it makes sense, and I don't think he's going to be like claiming that much money. You know what I mean? Because
I don't think so either.
He's had some injuries and obviously inconsistency problems, but I think that we can work out, you know, work through it for sure. You know, he had phenomenal years here.
Yeah.
That's really a fair point. But I mean, I feel like that's a guy who I think will get driven up a little bit potentially because he's young. Like, I don't know. I think that I don't know. We'll see. We'll see because there's been some relievers get some stupid money out there if people think that they can be their ace, like their ace reliever. So, like, I don't know. We'll have
Mario Rivera, yeah.
It depends
on how healthy he stays as well, you know.
Doesn't have enough of a track record to command really elite pay. So I think he should be within the Cardinals range.
Do you remember? I was going to say, do you remember? I think I'm trying to remember. I remember what was it, a couple of seasons back, I thought like his, he had like one of the fastest pitches of the season. It was like, I forgot what it was, like 104. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember that. I was like, damn, that dude is wild.
Yeah. No, like
and
every
he, his average pitch velocity was insane. It was like one of the highest in Major League Baseball.
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
Crazy.
Like, highest pitches, the fastest pitches thrown that season was just a list of Jordan Hicks pitches. Like,
yeah,
that's
it truly was. That's yeah. I mean, his freaking fastball was crazy.
Yeah. That's who he is. That's how it was last year. It's really
holy
just him.
Crap. So he
will be dominant.
He actually has the MLB record for 105.1 miles per hour.
No kidding. Wow.
I did not know
that. Yeah, because I remember he was like, I thought he was around there or whatever, whenever he had the fastest pitch of the season back, you know, whenever he was playing for the Cardinals a few years ago. Yeah.
That's like
Nolan Ryan crazy. Shit. And I remember back then, like, he was averaging like 101 or something.
So apparently in a spring training game, which obviously doesn't go towards statistics or anything, he threw 105.6.
Holy wow.
My
unreal.
God. That is ridiculous. 100 points. Jesus.
That's what I'm saying. He's probably
right up on the and head. Apparently not only his fastball, but his sinker as well had the second and third highest average speed of any MLB pitcher pitches in 2018. Wow. So even his sinkers were ridiculous.
He had a sinker that was a 98 mile per hour sinker.
A freaking sinker, bro. That's crazy. A
100 mile per hour sinker.
I mean, that's his two-seamer. They're probably categorizing it as a
sinker. Yeah, they're categorizing it as a sinker. No, I 100%. When you're
it's his fast pitch. Like,
I'm just saying, though, like a sinker, like typically is like, I don't know, like 90 or so. I just, you know, that's just crazy.
Yeah. No, his slider is much harder than normal sliders, though, too, I think.
Yeah.
And I think the slider was like mid-80s.
No, well... What is it? He's got a secondary pitch that's got crazy break though. I thought that's also pretty hard. Not mid 80s. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm misremembering. I have to look it up.
I'm trying to look it up, and obviously it's going to be. Yeah. So slider is average is 88.4 for his slider.
That's good. Yeah. That's on the upper end for sure. Because you usually see sliders that are like usually below 80s.
Fair 70s. Bit faster than that too.
Yeah. Well, the average or whatever, it's probably like around 80 or so.
Around 80 flat,
90 mile an hour slider with crazy, you know.
It's like Randy Johnson, dude.
Yeah, it's like, come on, it's not even fair. If he could command it at all, he would be the best pitcher of probably history, you know, if he could stay healthy and command it.
That'll take like a quarter of a second, like for his fastball to reach the plate, I would think. It'd be insane, you know.
Dude, I don't know how you even hit that effort.
You don't. I mean, that's the thing. Like 104 miles an hour, you know, like there's no hand eye coordination that you can do to make a connection like that. You know what I mean?
So
like by the time he releases the ball, it's already in the glove, you know?
Right. But he doesn't straighten guys out either, though. So
when Busch Gardens first opened, they have it now where it's a little playground. But Adam, actually, when we walk to the right side, when we come in. And like we're walking up to kind of like the sloped area, you know what I mean, where they have the shops to the right side.
I know what you mean.
You know that little playground in the corner. Area that's underneath.
Where the Build-A-Bear and all that stuff is in the back there.
Yes. So it used to be a batting cage where you can come in, and they had a simulation against pitchers. And my dad and I were there because my dad didn't want to stop drinking. Well, a little surprise. It was and we went there, and I got to go up against I did it three times, and I did it against two pitchers. I did Roger Clemens twice, and I was never a great hitter. But I actually got like the second time around, I was able to hit some of Roger Clemens stuff. And then I said, for the hell of it, I want Randy Johnson. And that 104 miles per hour is like, it was like unbelievably fast. But then like right when I was like, I fouled off a couple. And then it threw a freaking slider, and I was already swinging, and the ball just drops out. And you're like, what the hell just happened? And I'm like, how do hitters hit this? Like, you have to like already know what he's going to pitch before it happens. Cause he had a nasty slider that was super fast too. So man,
Yeah, that's why guys are always trying to guess what the pitcher's going to throw next, because that way you can hit it. Otherwise, it's going to be pretty hard to react.
Yep. There's no reaction. Exactly. You just have to commit before. Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the problem with when guys get older, really. I think that's one of the things, too, is because your reflexes get slower as you get older, too. So I do think there's some guys that come up that can read and react to shit, and those are the most elite hitters. But then as they start getting old, reflexes die down. Now they have to start guessing and timing it up earlier, starting their swing earlier.
Not to mention their eyes start to go out a little bit, too, even if it's just a little bit, you know, that can cost them.
I mean, it could literally just be like the tiniest amount, and that's all it takes. Because whenever you're throwing a fastball that fast, I mean, you're literally talking about it's like – a third of a second, and that's all you get, you know, by the time that they're releasing the ball and where your eye is looking at it into to the point where it's reaching home plate. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whenever they're throwing that fast, when they're throwing 100 miles an hour.
I did read an article too about Randy Johnson specifically that said the manager always try, even if it was like on a short rest for like 4 days instead of the 5 days, he would pitch him on day games in Seattle. And the reason why was where the shadow was were at was literally like coincided right where his slider happened. So the ball would be there. And right when the shadow happens, which is already messed with your eyes, the ball's completely down in the dirt. You just have no idea where the ball's at. I'm like, man, that would suck to go up against Randy Johnson during the day when you have that, you know, the shadow break. Oh my God, that would suck. But he said it was like the closest thing he had to an automatic win.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. But what's funny is how well the Cardinals did against Randy Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the most recent two no hitters. What was his name? Like Julian Javier or something like that.
Oh yeah, the guy for the Yankees. I can't remember, but I watched a damn game. I can't remember now.
Oh, he was playing for the Cardinals. Yeah. But yeah.
Oh, you're talking about for us? Okay, my bad.
It was something like that. I'd have to go back and look it up. I wish I remember. I should. But I watched that one live. It was against Randy Johnson. Randy Johnson gave up one run and pitched a complete game and lost to a no-hitter. Wow. And then he had the same thing happen to him later in the season. They played again. He also gave up like one run in a complete game. And this time it wasn't a no-hitter, but we shut him out instead. It's like, damn, that's crazy. Because that was not the good Cardinals either. That's like late 90s Cardinals. They're bad. So that's pretty
that's like, that was when, like, my grade school pitching, I lost a game. I had a no-hitter and lost the game 2-0. I gave up two walks, and both of them end up scoring from errors.
Yeah.
I take that back, because a guy got to third on a strikeout. He swung and missed on pitch three, and the catcher went and picked it up and threw it into the outfield. And I'm like, how the hell did I lose this game when nobody's actually got a hit on me? But anyways.
Jeez. That would piss me off.
Well, here, let's finish this up real quick about the Cardinals before moving on to the Blues here. Is there any other thing that we need besides pitching? So besides bullpen pitching and stuff like that, for example, I think we need to kind of shore up the outfield a little bit.
We do
kind of get a bit more of a solidification of like, who's going to be, is Tommy Edman going to be our center fielder? You know, is to your point that you said earlier in the podcast, OJ, is Burleson going to be in left field at all? Like what does it look like? You know what I mean? If we need to trade away Tyler Neal or Burleson or another player, so be it. But I think we need to have more consistency. You know, OJ, what's your thoughts there?
Well, I think that they can't do much about the outfield right now because they've got like three, quote unquote, outfielders up for trades. Potentially, like, so Burleson's one that they might trade, O'Neill they might trade, Carlson they might trade.
Sure.
These are all guys we've heard about them potentially trading. So depending on which of them goes, kind of maybe depend how it shakes out, because I agree. I mean, Tommy Edman's not a center fielder, or at least he hasn't been, but he did flash ability there last year when he was in there. I would like to see what he could look like if he actually spent an offseason preparing to play center field. And because, I mean, if he could develop, he seems to have like read the ball well, take decent routes. He's fast. If he could get more refined with that and like get it more consistent and everything, I wonder if he couldn't be a pretty studly defensive center fielder. But we don't know that. So it makes sense to have some sort of fallback option, right? So it kind of depends what you've got left. If you have like Dylan Carlson on your roster still, you're probably good with the outfield, actually. But if you trade him away, now you might want to look at adding somebody that might be a defensive replacement type center fielder or something, you know, in case you need him. Because you might need Tommy to back up Mason Wynn too. I mean, we don't know if Mason Wynn's going to hit well enough to be able to play every night. You might wind up having to put Tommy Edman at shortstop, and then who's going to play
center and you probably still got to give Nolan Gorman some rotation in the infield and not just a DH. So that's a good point too. So.
Yeah. Well, Nolan Gorman, I mean, he's my everyday second baseman at this point. I mean, I don't know what's up with his back, so maybe if that's a limiting factor, you got to get somebody to help fill in over there. But you got, you know, Brendan Donovan that can help out with that. But I mean, he's also a guy, him and Gorman are both guys that might get traded in if we try and trade for like a young pitcher that's cost controlled. So one of them might not be on the team. You don't know.
Yeah. So that's a good point.
Lots of things in the works right now that kind of depend on for that.
For sure. Adam, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I wanted to jump in. One thing that we're not talking about here that I really want to bring up, because we were talking about pitching earlier. What's the other huge component? And that's the catching position.
Yeah.
Wilson Contreras, and he's just completely weak behind the plate. And it doesn't seem like we're doing anything about it. You know, that's a serious problem, because we have these new guys, you know, we bring in three new guys. But with Contreras behind the plate, how is that going to work? You know?
Yeah.
I have no faith in this situation at all.
It's a fair either. Point. It's going to be a negative.
It seriously is. So are we going to address that situation?
But yeah, I agree. That is a concern. But of note there is they non-tendered Andrew Kisner, and now that means Ivan is going to be on the MLB squad next year. And I think they definitely feel like his defensive skills progress to a point where they start viewing him as an actual prospect at the catching spot. So obviously he's very much we still need to see what he's capable of. But, I mean, he tore the cover off the ball last year in AAA. His defense has been improving, evidently. We'll see what he can do.
A couple other points I just wanted to highlight real quick without going too deep here. Management. Huge need for the Cardinals here. Lack of management.
Just bring Yadi. Be done with it.
Well, you probably heard the news. Yadi says that he will come back in a limited capacity this year. He will not be back full-time coaching staff this year. He will come back and help and, you know, make some visits during spring training and make some, you know, visits in the regular season. You know, because obviously he's dealing with some family matters and whatnot.
Well, he's also coaching right now.
He is. So. You're right. So he doesn't have the capacity currently to fill that role, unfortunately, because that is a big gap. And we obviously knew about it and it didn't seem like they were going to do anything about it. So here we are once again stuck with lack of management and coaching in general. Yeah. So Marmol behind the helm or ahead of the helm, whatever they say, definitely scares the shit out of me, because he just does not seem experienced enough to effectively manage us whatsoever. And finally, the team chemistry as well. It's obviously not a tangible aspect, but fostering team chemistry, and this part comes from the manager as well, is absolutely essential for success. You know, we need that positive team dynamic, and we're missing that.
And some of that comes from winning, for sure.
Part of it is, but you need good management. You need the right players. You need, you know, experience. You need a lot of things, and we just need that chemistry. We're just not clicking. You know?
Yeah.
100%.
I do think that the guys that they got there seem to get along pretty well sometimes. I do think losing got them down. But I also think that there's some guys that didn't feel like they fit in as much that maybe aren't with the team anymore. Mm-hmm. I think I heard something about that anyway. So I don't know who that is of the group we traded away. So, I mean,
right.
obviously that affects things on who you might acquire still this offseason, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, they did bring Dirty Dan Descalso on as the bench coach. So hopefully he can add some Grizzly veteran to it. I should say grizzled veteran presence.
Yeah, I knew what you mean.
The whole management mix up there. That is something I really like, actually. That's another positive. If we're looking for positives of the pitcher signing so far, is they're all veteran dudes. They've all got that sort of like mean streak in them capability. Mm-hmm. And like Lance Lynn in particular, though, is like, you know, that dude's fucking hilarious in the dressing room. Like, he's always funny as shit. Like, so I think he's probably good at keeping shit pretty light, actually. So that definitely will come in handy too. But my point is, you actually now have a lot of veteran players. You're a very veteran team now. You were very young at the pitching spot last year, in particular, outside of a couple guys. Now you're really fucking old at the pitching spot. So one benefit is the experience that comes with it. So hopefully that'll aid Ollie and them in keeping the team on track.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll definitely see what ends up happening. I think that's a good point, though. You know, I was not a fan of Marmol last year for sure, and even the year before, I thought that he was really like helped by Albert Pujols and Molina's greatness, and I thought that Molina was coaching more than he was at that point. So we'll see what ends up happening, though. Obviously, we're probably sticking with Marmol. There would have been probably an announcement at this point, but anyways, let's get to some Blues talk here. Obviously, there's not as much to talk about with the Blues, as their season's still progressing, and they're not, you know, they're doing better than we thought it probably. But anyways, quick update: they are 11-9-1 for 23 points. They are fourth in the Central, 7 behind the first place Avs. They are in the first wild card spot, 3 behind who sits in third position in Central, which are the Jets. They are 7th in the West, 9 points behind Vegas, and 15th in the NHL, 10 points behind the Rangers. You know, OJ, what's your thoughts so far in the season for the Blues?
I actually am pretty happy with it so far, because now, like I said, they continue to show dominance against certain teams at times, like against Buffalo and Tage Thompson. Let's see, I'm not sure what they're doing. Oh, they're up 6-3 right now.
Yeah, I was gonna say they had two goals 24 seconds apart earlier.
I don't know how they
scored from the same line, so it's like, holy shit.
I don't know how they pick the teams they decide to get up for, but it seems like when they get up for a game, they can fucking wreck some people, even good teams. So I guess it's a matter now of finding the consistency, and maybe that will involve bringing in some higher skilled players to play throughout the lineup. Like, I think maybe you need to improve your lower lines skill level potentially. That might be about it. Or it could just be, you know, something as simple as finding somebody that can coach a power play or something, because their power play is like historically bad.
It's still atrocious.
If it was even just average, they probably are like 5 points higher in the standings or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because they probably won a couple more games. Like, their power play is unbelievably bad. So some of it has to be bad luck. Some of it's got to be something else. But if they could work that out, you're looking at like off the bubble, like solidly within the playoff team potentially. So I'm pretty happy with the season so far.
What's your thoughts so far on the Blues season?
Yeah, so far, I mean, I feel better about the season, especially as of late. We have been playing better for sure. The consistency, like you said, OJ, was key. That power play, though, man, I just looked it up. We're converting just 9.2% of power plays. Yeah. We're tied with Chicago for second worst in the NHL. Wow.
Oh, and that's with us scoring a couple goals recently.
Yeah.
We were historically bad at the time there.
So like, there's definitely room for improvement, no doubt about it. But I am, you know, the puck control and, you know, the offensive, you know, zone time, you know, on their power play in Minnesota actually looked like they, you know, whenever they're playing them, like, they just looked like shit. Cause I was watching that game on Tuesday and it just looked like shit, you know, like they just couldn't do anything, you know. They actually, They had full puck control the whole time, but they couldn't seem like they could get anywhere with it. You know what I mean? They just couldn't get the job done, you know? Yeah. You're in the end there and it's like, come on, guys. But then there's nights like tonight where we're absolutely dominating. So consistency is key, but I still feel like there's, well, we all know there's still plenty of season left. It's only November the 30th. I'm not frantic yet by any means, because obviously where we stand, where we're sitting in the division, we're still in contention for, you know, a playoff spot. So we're not, you know, we're not down and out. It's just that we need to find that consistency though. Yeah, I think we'll, you know, I think at least this year we'll be a little bit better. I'm hoping for a little bit better outcome than last season for sure. Because last season was just that was brutal. One season that I just didn't want to watch anything. It was just so brutal. I just was like, I have no interest in watching it all anymore. You know, I just completely was just deflated.
Yeah, they're actually funner. Much funner to watch.
Well, yeah, I actually can watch it and it's enjoyable. But the other thing is that there's some effort as well. You know, whereas last year I felt like there was zero effort on the ice.
It's noticeable. That's what I'm saying. They're out there.
For
they
sure.
play. They care. And it's noticeable. So it makes it more fun to watch. Like,
yeah. And Benny, of course, too, overall the season, you know, for the most part has been great again as well. So.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we just got to get him some backup still. Yeah. But that's something we talked about for a long time is our defense. So defensive line.
Yeah. I will say honestly, both of you said it. It's consistency. And that's the biggest thing for me. Right. So I'm just taking a look. I'm just going to rally these off. We're obviously winning 6-3 now. We lost 3-1. OK, that's a normal hockey score. We win 4-2 against Chicago. OK, normal hockey score. We lose 8-3 to the Predators. We win.
Dude, the Predators. Sorry, I want to pause on that for just a quick second. Dude, the Predators. Have you seen? They have been on fire lately. Have you seen them? Dude, they are ridiculous. Really they've won like 6 or 7 in a row, I thought. So anyway, I just want to mention that like they're on one right now. But anyway, go ahead. Sorry,
it's a good point.
But yeah, so then you have Arizona 6-5. So again, a high scoring game. A normal game to me with, when you win against the Ducks 3-1, you lose 5-1 to the Sharks, lose 5-1 to the Kings, you win 5-0 against Tampa, you win 8-2 against Aps. Which team are you going to get though? The team that's letting in 5 goals or scoring 5 goals? You know what I mean? So that is what
the game was against Colorado, was it not? Like, that's pretty ridiculous.
I understand that, but we still lost. We lost like so a week ago, like 10 days, we lost 4-1 to them. You know what I mean? So, yeah, you took it to them that one game, but then literally the past Wednesday, the first of this month, you lost 4-1.
That's what I was saying. It's like it has nothing to do with how good the team is or anything like that.
Yeah,
like,
it's just how they're feeling that day, I guess. I don't know.
Exactly.
You got out of bed, consistency. Right? Yeah, so, I mean, but we've been saying this for a while, though, man. Is it consistency has been an issue with the Blues for a while now, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, some of that comes with experience, too, the consistency. I mean, so like, you know, they do have kind of a younger team, especially their guys that they're relying on for success, for the most part, young still. So, you know, they have yet to bring up some young guys that they're going to be bringing up, which kind of gives me even more hope because they got some good position players coming up. But I don't think any defensemen still, though. I think I might have heard of a defenseman. I forgot what his name was. There was somebody I saw somebody mention. So I don't
know. It's going to be interesting for sure. See how the Blues end out so far. But so far, I think it's definitely, you know, pretty much a consensus in St. Louis that it's much better than what it was last season. So.
By far.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about Mizzou football before we wrap up the podcast here. And quick update for everybody here. Missouri is still number 9 in the CFP after beating Arkansas, which we kind of figured it was going to be. But we will be playing in the New York in a new New Year's Six Bowl. At least it's incredibly highly likely, but most people are pretty much saying that it's going to happen. So there are some probable games and bowl game scenarios here. And there was 12 major analysts, some from ESPN, some from other beat writers and stuff like that. So I'm going to go through these with you here. Out of those 12, seven of them had us in the Goodyear Cotton Bowl. Four of them had us in the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. And one had us in the Verbo Fiesta Bowl, which I thought was interesting, but whatever.
Fiesta Bowl.
So out of those, it'd be different, you know what I mean? But go ahead.
We always get the Cotton Bowl, that's why.
Yeah, and that's what they're saying. So the consensus right now is that there's four of them that said we will be in the Cotton Bowl versus Texas, which I think will be a good game. It would be bringing the old rivalry back from the Big 12 days, especially since this is last year in the Big 12 for Texas. Be kind of fun. Be like, hey, welcome to the SEC. You know what I mean? So I think that would be cool. Two of them had us in the Cotton Bowl against Penn State, which seems to be kind of the favorite right now, is that we'll be taking on Penn State, but I'm not terribly too certain. Two of them had us in the Peach Bowl against Penn State, which was the biggest consensus, like on a Vegas betting line, that was the bowl that we were going to end up with, but it's since changed quite a bit. One had us in the Peach Bowl against Tulane. One had us in the Cotton Bowl against Tulane.
At this point, no one knows, right? It's just all over the place.
Exactly. And one had us in, in the Fiesta Bowl against Texas. That's what that was the one for the Fiesta Bowl. So really,
there's a 100% chance that we will be in a bowl. That's all that we know at this point in time. Yeah, exactly. All right.
That's the only thing we know. There seems to be a heavy consensus towards either the Cotton Bowl or the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. And the Fiesta Bowl obviously has one vote there, but it does seem to be that it's either going to be Texas or Penn State when you look at the favorite, but there's Tulane. It's kind of like that dark horse right with the Fiesta Bowl. If you had to ask me, I think that the Cotton Bowl versus Texas would be the best game. I think the NCAA would make the most money off of it. And that's the game that I think would happen. I'd much rather face Penn State or Tulane, since I think those are easier wins. But hey, if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best. And if we can show that we can beat a team that was, questionable to go to the CFP this time around, that we definitely deserve to be there. I think it will help us for our ratings next year. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I agree 100%. Actually, I hope we play a good team. So, honestly, my dream scenario, I don't care which bowl necessarily, any of the New Year's Six ones I'm happy with, right? But I want to play Texas because I want to play Texas. Actually, you know what? Make it the Cotton Bowl. Let's have it in Texas against Texas. Let's go down there, smoke Texas in Texas in what's basically a home game for them, and then flip Ryan Wingo to Mizzou right after that game and just watch the Texas fans cry.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Scenario. That's what I'm hoping for.
Well, and the funny thing is, too, in that scenario that you just ran through, OJ, if Texas Texas wins, but the status quo stays the same for the CFP, then obviously we'd be taking on a number seven or actually a number six team. We would move up to number eight because either Washington or Oregon will lose, right? So they'll be put behind us. And so it would be number six Texas versus number eight Mizzou. And if we beat them, then we probably jump into the top five, especially because Alabama will lose. So we actually might be higher than that too. Like there's a lot, you know what I mean? So if we win a bowl game, especially against Texas, we might be top five, top four at the end of the season.
But that's what I'm saying. That's all I care about. I don't want Tulane. I don't want SMU bullshit. I'd be happy with Penn State. They're a reasonably good school, like a good program for football, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't want a group of five school. That's really what I don't want. You can't win when you play them. You either suck because you lost to a group of five school, or big deal, you beat a group of five school. Who cares if they were ranked 17th in the nation? You know what I mean?
OJ, it was like when Chris Waddle in high school had to wrestle a girl. We're like, dude, this sucks for you because you're either going to get beat by a girl or you pinned a girl.
Hope you're proud of yourself.
Wow. I'll tell you the funniest thing about that. He goes, you don't understand. He's like, it's fine. I get to wrestle a chick. This is going to be awesome. And all of a sudden, we looked at each other and go, hey, wow, you know you're in the 185 weight class. And he looks and he goes, oh, shit. It was a short butter ball, and she beat him. It was hilarious.
Oh, my God.
No fucking way. That dude had no heart.
And he's like, all right, I'm done.
I wouldn't come back either after that. I would quit wrestling for sure.
Dude. And so that was the same year, too. That was the same year that he wrestled a dude. And I swear to God, the dude got an erection when he was wrestling him. And, you know, I'm sure it was from Fletcher or whatever. But
about that,
yeah, you remember that? Yeah. It was so funny. So because he like injured himself or whatever. And our athletic trainer came over who was female, was looking at him, and like we swear to God, it went down right when he got back up and saw Chris on all fours. It went back up, was ready to go.
God.
There you go.
Anyways,
it's a dominance thing, Josh.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, guys. Whenever you see somebody in all four, I guess there you go. He's ready to go.
All right. Assume the position.
Oh, assume the position.
All right, let's talk about going on, Jay.
No, I think that was pretty much it. I mean, yeah, give me Texas at the Cotton Bowl. That's what I
want. You're gonna say, assume the position, Texas at the Cotton Bowl at home. Well, you know, pretty much home for them. It'll be, I guess it'll be at Arlington or whatever / Dallas Fort Worth area or whatever, so to speak. But it'll be Austin. Yeah, so it'll be a home game for them.
That's
what
I'm saying. It'll be a home game.
It's only a couple hours away.
No one will pick Mizzou to win. No. Mizzou will blow them out because Mizzou hung with Georgia in Georgia. They're going to show Texas.
Yeah.
That would be incredible to watch. That would be incredible.
That's
right. This ain't the little brother you used to beat the shit out of in the Big 12.
Yep. We grew up.
Welcome to SEC football, bitch.
The last thing I wanted to add on that, too, is one point I heard that I think Bears thinking about is that, you know, these bowls want to make money, so usually you don't put two smaller time matchups together. So like I do think that Mizzou's less likely to get a Tulane or SMU because Mizzou doesn't draw as well as like a Texas would, so for instance, or Penn State, you know. So like if they put Penn State probably with Tulane or something like that, you know, to make up for the fact that Tulane certainly has a small fan base as well. So that, I think we're less likely to play them. It is the good news.
That's a good point. Well, guys, let's head to the last segment we have here, and let's talk about some championship football here. So we have championship weekend coming in the NCAA, right? We'll stick to just the Power 5 conferences and their championships here because, you know, who cares about Tulane? Although they've had a good year.
Game versus number 25, dude. Like, I would watch that.
I know. I was being more facetious. But anyways. let's take a look at the Big Ten championship. We have number 2, Michigan versus number 16, Iowa. Iowa is a defensive power horse, but Michigan still.
I was going to say Michigan clearly got that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have Michigan by 10. So anybody else have any predictions?
I wonder if Iowa can't drag Michigan down into the mud with them and just.
I would love to see it.
That would be awesome after this year, especially.
Low scoring game. Yeah, dude. Because
and give them the one loss so that, you know.
I'm going to hate.
You were on the doorstep record. And you would lose. Yeah. And exactly. That'd be awesome. And it would be the game that, Harbaugh comes back to.
That would be epic. Yeah. That would be epic.
Oh, dude. Yes. You
can't write that shit.
Yeah. That would be epic.
That's a game to watch for sure. That is a game to watch.
There you go.
Well, the good thing is they're all in different time slots. So you can actually watch all 5. So that's what I plan on doing. They start tomorrow. I can't remember. I think it's the ACC championship tomorrow. But yeah.
See. Yeah, you got New Mexico State at Liberty versus Liberty, and you have Oregon Washington tomorrow.
Oregon Washington, that's what it is, yeah. Well, let's actually talk about that, right? So that's it is the Pac-12 championship. Yeah, number 3 Washington and number 5 Oregon. I got the upset here. Oregon's been on a roll. I got Oregon by 10. Have you guys been watching any of these games?
I have Oregon. Yeah, I was gonna say I have Oregon of the two right here. I have Oregon winning that of the versus Washington as well.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with you guys. I think Oregon is pretty much shown that they're a better team, except for the fact that they lost to Washington. So,
in a very close game at Washington, you know what I mean. So I think that in a neutral site, I think they'll be able to pull it off.
Yeah, and I think teams get as the season goes on too. And Washington has kind of struggled with easy competition, whereas Oregon has smoked.
Yes, they have.
And not yes. so, but I mean, like, did, I think they crushed Utah. Utah was ranked like 13th at the time or something. Like
at the time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They had beat USC pretty good, and USC was ranked high. Like, I don't know. Like, Utah's not a bad team, and Oregon smoked them pretty good. So I give
that. And that's the thing is, like, Oregon just took an Oregon State, and OJ, I know you and I were talking about that game, and it was Oregon just took them behind the shed. And at the time, you know, Oregon State was ranked like 12th. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it was just like it should have been a much closer game. And I know it was at Oregon, but Bo Nix is going to be the Heisman winner, man. He's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. I really do think Oregon's going to fuck one. I mean, it might be more than 10. I don't know. Let's say, I'll say 17 just to be.
All right. I like that.
Yeah. Got to have a little bit of disagreement, you know, otherwise it's not
a little bit of variety. I'm with you there. All right. How about the Big 12 championship? We have number 7 Texas versus number 18 Oklahoma State. This is a classic Big 12 championship here.
Texas,
I got Texas winning by 3, and they win it very late. I think that Oklahoma State goes into the locker room by 10 or 17 and ends up losing to Texas by 3. That's what I got.
Damn.
It would just be a classic loss for Oklahoma State against Texas, of course. So that's kind of what I unfortunately see for the Cowboys. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Longhorns.
I actually think Texas is good this year too, for the first time in a long time. Like, they're legit good. Sure. Like, I think they're a legit 7 team. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, agreed.
I think they're gonna beat Oklahoma State by a good bit. Like, oh, let's say at least 10. I'll say at least 10 they beat Oklahoma State by.
Fair enough. Yeah. How about the ACC? You got Florida State versus number 14 Louisville. I have, even though Travis Hunter went down, their Heisman candidate and their starting quarterback for Florida State, I have them winning this game again in a very close game that shouldn't be a close game. I have them winning by 3.
Yeah, I have the Seminoles winning as well.
Ooh, yeah, they lost their quarterback, but I think Louisville is like completely. I think Louisville is like completely overranked. I don't think they should have been in the top 10. I don't think their resume warrants it. I think they're a big name basketball program, and that helped their ranking a lot. So, I mean, I think Florida State rolls them too.
What are Louisville currently ranked?
14th. 14th
or is it
15th? 14th in CFP. 14th
and CFP. Okay. CFP. Gotcha.
15th and the AP. You're right, OJ.
Okay. Gotcha. I must be up in the AP. Okay. But, and that's after they were like 10 last week and they just got beat Kentucky. Like,
yeah, that's true. Yeah. They did. But, you're right. So, they did get.
So, they lost by Florida State pulls them, right?
Yeah.
Listen.
Close either.
Go ahead.
17 points.
Yeah. Okay. So I will say this. We know the CFP is not perfect. That's why we're expanding to 12 teams and stuff like that. But to your point, OJ, Louisville was ranked, I think, 9th in the nation in the AP, but they were ranked behind Mizzou in the CFP because the CFP committee knew that we had better losses than their one loss and that we had better wins than any of their wins. You know what I mean? So yeah. I do like how the CFP at least takes that into effect, consideration.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And Louisville fans were pissed about it. And then they went out and lost to
Kentucky.
Like, and then now they're not pissed about it. They're like, yeah, I guess that sucks. So, I mean, to me, they've proven they're proud. I guess I shouldn't say they're lucky to be in this game. I mean, they probably are the next best team in that conference, but
in the ACC. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that Clemson is a better team than them right now, but not for the season. They deserve to be in it.
Yeah. I don't want to go 17 on 2, so I'm going to change that one to 14. So,
easy enough.
There you go.
How about the SEC championship game and pretty much the game part 2? Georgia number 1, Alabama number 8. Alabama wins, they are in the national championship playoffs. As well as Georgia, because obviously Georgia will be number 3 or number 4 at that point. I have Georgia making this not even close. I have them winning by 14 with Alabama scoring 14 points at the end of the game to make it close. I just have a feeling Georgia is going to stomp the wheels off of Alabama and prove that Alabama is not that great this year.
I had the Bulldogs by a field goal. Not by a field goal, but a touchdown. Yeah, so I'll go by 7.
Yeah.
Touchdown and a point after.
God. Yeah, it feels like that's about the range there, too, for me, because that's tough, because look, the problem here is that Alabama kind of has been, I want to say, a little, they seem like they might be a little limited in what they can do this year based on their personnel. Like they run pretty simple this year. I don't know if that's always how they've done it or what, but I've been watching some videos about this game, and I think that the way they've been winning this season so far is just by out talenting the other team. Essentially, they're not doing anything like super exotic or interesting offensively. They're just having better guys, so like they're not going to out talent Georgia. So I think it sounds right to me. Georgia rolls. So I mean, I could do 14 too. Honestly, I'm gonna go 14.
All right. Well, we're in agreement here. I like it. Well, we'll see what ends up happening. Obviously, it's going to be very interesting, and obviously, it will have a direct impact on what happens in the CFP, which we'll talk about.
I'll forget what I guessed. I'm curious to see how well I do.
I got it written down, so we're good.
Sweet.
We'll talk about that next week here. Let's go ahead and head to the sign off here. Adam, would you like to tell the good listeners how they could reach out and interact with the show?
Reach out and touch faith. Check us out. Facebook.com/TheHometownLosers, LOUSERS. Also, check us out on the new Twitter, or X.com/HometownLosers. We'd love to hear from you. Check us out. We're posting, obviously, some content up there for all the new episodes. We're definitely here starting to see some new folks joining us on Facebook, so that's great to hear. So would love to hear from each and every one of you. So give us a like, give us a share, hit us up in the comment section as well. And I'll toss it back to you.
All right. Yep. We definitely appreciate our listeners, especially when they interact with us. If you want to see anything specific or any specific content that you would like us to cover, please let us know. So we can definitely work on that for you. OJ, what do you have for the game of the week?
Well, the for a St. Louis fan, the only show in town, the St. Louis Blues, we'll be at the Coyotes on Saturday, December 2nd at 8 p.m. So that's your St. Louis game of the week. But other than that,
Mullet Arena.
Really, if you like football, you really ought to be watching college football this week. Because even though I kind of predicted a lot of the bigger games to be blowouts, I'm probably going to be wrong in all of them, really. So
right.
I think we ought to keep an eye on those, especially Iowa, Michigan, because that could be like a really funny game to watch. It could be hilarious. And it's always fun to watch cheaters fail. So that's one I'd keep my eye on too on Saturday. Watch the scoreboard.
We'll be tuning in.
Yeah,
absolutely. Very, very excited to see what ends up happening with the college football stuff. Anyways, appreciate you guys. Appreciate your time. We definitely appreciate the listeners as well. And thank you very much for supporting us through the year now that we are, quote unquote, in season 2 as we start our second year. So, again, let us know if there's anything that you would like to say to see or like to hear about on the socials. And we'll catch you next week on the Hometown Losers podcast. Have a great night, everybody.
Hey, this is Josh. Thanks for checking out and tuning in to the Hometown Losers podcast. Check us out next week as we continue our silliness and talk a little bit about the St. Louis sports scene. Catch you next week.